You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Some of the most astonishing paintings call to attention the physical act of applying paint to canvas. Some of the most riveting theater or film breaks the fourth wall by reminding you that you are watching a play or a film. Some of the best books are books that read you. I point out these examples because this is an address about giving addresses in our tradition. Nothing in my Catholic past really prepared me for this. Our tradition is a tradition that's championed religious freedom and raises to worth your individual spiritual experience, and so fully democratizes the seeking and expression of truth and meaning. So why then do we come and listen to a prepared talk by somebody else who may not, or may, know what we need to hear? Is it that there's no such thing as a free morning tea? Seriously, though, why do we preach in the Unitarian tradition? This is a fair question, and thanks to recent experiences in different pulpits in the UK, this has been a lot on my mind. One explanation is merely to do with history. The early Reformation came about in part by demystifying the elitist Latin language of the church, translating the Bible into local vernacular languages so that any literate person could read for themselves what all the fuss was about. But even if you read the Bible in English, or if you were illiterate, heard it read to you, you'd know that the Bible doesn't always surrender up its meaning as clearly as an IKEA instruction leaflet. So the early Protestant clergy had to go further and explain the often cryptic book to the laity. So as a result, the Protestant tradition from which we've sprung has always relied more heavily on preaching than the Catholic tradition it's separated from. The fixed ritual liturgy of the Catholic Mass is much longer, and so their preaching tends to be shorter and less focal. But the Protestant tradition is preaching as teaching and is central to Protestant services. But you know, history, heritage, tradition, dead people's baggage. Being progressive, maybe we should put it down. Why would anyone preach to teach in this live oral medium, this spoken word event, when even the university lecture is history now? Why? Seriously, why do we? Our Protestant preaching tradition developed long before mass literacy, which is common now, and even longer before secondary and tertiary education was widespread as it is now, and even longer before Google showed up, the world's fastest librarian. 1 million sources in 0.7 of a second. That's pretty good. When I was lecturing at university, it occurred to me that any student with sufficient curiosity and an internet connection could find out everything they wanted to about the subject I was teaching them all by themselves. The purpose of the lectures, then, could only be to get them to want to do it. Similarly, there is no information I can give you up here that you can't look up for yourself on belief.net. So there has to be something more to preaching than giving information in an information age. Despite the many other more exciting forms of information delivery, the address, this sermon, persists across the board in Protestant traditions, even in our Unitarian movement. So one of my colleagues from the States, Diane Colley. It persists as an expectation of both clergy and congregation, despite that we kind of know that there are fundamental limitations to using words to capture what is, after all, beyond language. Written or spoken, the word is only a symbol. As an oral stimulus on the ear or as a visual stimulus on the eye, a word represents something other than the sound it makes on the eardrum or the squiggles on the page. The letters D-O-G that we see, or the sound dog that we hear, creates an image in the mind of the hairy quadruped that thinks you're God. But words are more than a system of signs and signifiers. Kurt Vonnegut, writer, wit, and sometime Unitarian lay preacher, true, this is him preaching at All Souls in New York, he said that reading was, in effect, meditating with the mind of another, and thus forms quite an intimate relationship. In reading or in hearing, as we are now, the words of another, we kind of surrender to them, allow them to restructure our inner world, create moods, thoughts, ideas, images. Reading or hearing symbols called words literally generates an imagined world for a while. So words, heard or read, are a means of connecting minds and form a pact between the sender of the words and the receiver. This imagined inner world, however, fades quickly as the moment of connection passes, but it leaves traces in the neural pathways. Repeated encounters with the words of a particular author builds up these traces like sediment in a river. Reading or listening repeatedly to anything thus changes you over time. So it makes sense to be selective about who you read or listen to over and over and over. Preaching, therefore, assumes and maintains a long-standing bond of trust. And perhaps this is why every religion in the world comes down hard on lying. Lying breaks the fidelity between words and the truth. They also come down hard on gossip and slander and so on, words that can wound the mind that's offered its vulnerability in reading or listening. It thus behooves anyone, as our meditation says, who would deal in words to offer words which are both true and kind, or at least not untrue and not unkind. Words are actions. Words establish relationship. Every word is, in effect, an attempt to bridge the gap between our solitudes, a leap of faith that we can make ourselves known to another and feel we're no longer completely separate selves locked in the first-person kingdom of our own skulls. For good or ill, you become the words that occupy and shape your mind. Everybody uses words. Not everybody uses them well. And not everyone deserves to be allowed into your head. A culture of free speech produces a lot of cultural garbage. I mean, imagine if you had nothing but a steady diet of talkback radio. What that would do to you. Still, even the best words can fail the best writers or speakers. Here's one great wordsmith talking about the inadequacy of his tools.
T.S. Eliot, The Four Quartets. So here I am, trying to use words, and every attempt is a wholly new start and a different kind of failure. Because one has only learnt to get the better of words for the thing one no longer has to say, or the way in which one is no longer disposed to say it. And so each venture is a new beginning, arrayed on the inarticulate, with shabby equipment always deteriorating, in the general mess of imprecision of feeling, undisciplined squads of emotion. And what there is to conquer by strength and submission has already been discovered once or twice or several times by men who one cannot hope to emulate. But there is no competition. There is only the fight to recover what has been lost and found and lost again and again. And now, under conditions that seem unpropitious, but perhaps neither gain nor loss, for us there is only the trying. The rest is not our business.
Thanks, Richard. For us there's only the trying. The rest is not our business. Even if perfect words can't come, for us there's only the trying. To preach is to try. The word essay comes from the French, j'essaie, I'm an attempt. despite garbled translations, despite misunderstandings, despite the thousand and one ways the tenuous link of symbols passed between selves can go wrong. I don't know if you're hip to this. There's this meme going around on the internet where there's this ambiguous audio signal and 50% of the population hears Laurel and the other hears Yanni, and they're absolutely certain it's that one and it's the same cue. So the idea is to learn to live with the fundamental inadequacy of spoken words, but to keep at it, trusting to the slow accretion of time. The response to the limitations around words should not be to surrender, as Eliot says, and he should know. It would be a mistake to pretend worship or any spiritual expression can ever be utterly free of words. I mean, there's no meditation in existence whose context is not framed by words like focus on your breathing, let your thoughts come and go. Imagine a big ball of warm sunlight in your stomach. The words frame the silence. Silence may calm your spirit, of course, but the risk in silent monasticism is disappearing up yourself, and we live in a world of relationships. On the other end of the spectrum, the limitations around words in worship won't be fixed in open discussion forums like some aimless dormitory bull session. You get a verbal soup, a multi-directional white noise, and it encourages competition, as Eliot admits. For us, there should be no competition. What would be the point? Because we are, all of us, aren't we, chasing in our own many ways something that will always remain elusive and beyond language, an experience of the sacred, the holy, the divine, the transcendent, the whatever you want to call it, something that has to do with things beyond language, time, eternity, and our mortal identity that finds itself in space and time, but knows it's something more and meaningful and longs to flow forth in fuller expression. With that in mind, would you join me in singing "There's a River Flowing in My Soul"? Stand as you're able. There is indeed a river in our souls, and it longs to flow forth in fuller expression. Between these addresses I've written and the blog posts I've written and the messages in the newsletter I've written over the last 10 years, my wife, who should know, estimates I've written the equivalent of about 6 doctoral dissertations. Not with the same academic rigor, of course. In all those words, what I've essentially been doing is chasing and trying to pin down the elusive God of my understanding and reporting to you about it to encourage you in your search. But even with the best will and memory in the world, the keenest listener out there only retains about 40% of the material an hour after the hearing, and in a few hours, almost nothing. Traces, sediments, impressions. What have all these 6 doctoral dissertations worth of words been for then? What are they for? The UUA says that ministers should spend 20 to 25 hours of their working week preparing worship. So all the researching, the reading, the drafting, the keyboard pounding, the editing of word choice, the editing of phrasing, crafting your best words in your best way, not untrue and not unkind, down to something like 20 minutes or so, following the miniskirt rule, just enough to cover the essentials. These words can't be about informing you. This is the worst medium in the world for getting folks to remember things. These words also can't form individualized relationships personally, since all of you, enmeshed in your own individual contexts and abilities and concerns, are going to hear it differently. In preaching, there is only the trying. Trying to do what, exactly? One of my colleagues in the UK did a little experiment. He simply gave up not preaching, but writing addresses. Over Lent, he was encouraging people to think about what they needed to give up, to let go of, to free their spirits and live their faith more fully. So it came to him like a flash. He gave up the thing he loved best, but which consumed his week and kept him less available to them. He gave up preparing the address. I mean, he came to Sunday service with a few things in mind he wanted to say, but instead of delivering a prepared text that consumed his week, as I'm doing right now, he just spoke off the cuff, or more charitably, let himself speak as the Spirit moved him. And what he was able to give them, the gift, was simply presence, his present tenseness, being in the moment with them and their full attention. And this is kind of what we do in Lectio Divina. We have a short reading of the day, and we just allow ourselves to riff on it. And what comes out, comes out. And sometimes we even find out what we think in the act of speaking our thoughts out loud. The sacrifice and risk he's made is something every old jazz musician knows. You don't want to follow the music too tightly, but allow, as they say, space in the music for the Lord to walk through it. All preaching, scripted or not, is both a sacrifice and a gift. My colleague sacrifices control and the security that comes with control. His gift is full presence and lots more availability during the week. What a prepared address like this sacrifices is time and the focused labor of scholarship and craftsmanship. The gift to you is an artifact, an art form, a live speech event closer in many ways to performance art. Which sacrifice is better? Is an unhelpful question. They both have advantages and drawbacks. So maybe it's horses for courses. Neither spontaneous nor scripted provide information very well. Both will be forgotten in their particulars. Both will build a relationship of a kind over time, but neither will be able to individualize relationships with each and every congregant. Both are public addresses, but for a public that is varied and always changing, a public that's a moving target. Why would you even try to do something so doomed in so many ways to be, as Eliot says, a different kind of failure each time? While I was wrestling with these questions, as always happens when I'm stuck, something just came across my desk, came to me. This reading came to me like a timely gift of grace, and the answer to a prayer I hadn't even found the words for yet.
As a lay person who has spent a great many hours listening to sermons, I have an other than academic interest in preaching, an interest in the hope I and so many others bring into the extraordinary moment when someone attempts to speak in good faith about something that matters to people who attempt to listen in good faith. The circumstance is moving in itself, since we poor mortals are so far enmeshed in our frauds and shenanigans, not to mention our self-deceptions, that a serious attempt at meaning, spoken and heard, is quite exceptional. It has a very special character. To speak in one's own person and voice to others who listen from the thick of their endlessly varied situations about what truly are or ought to be matters of life and death, is a singular thing. For this we come to church.
To speak in one's own person and voice to others who listen from the thick of their endlessly varied situations about what truly are or ought to be matters of life and death is a singular thing. We live, as you probably are aware, in a hyper-mediated world, and we receive over 1,000 coded messages in language every day. Nearly all of them are an attempt to coerce or control you into economic or political behaviors that benefit those with the power and means to send those messages. In this world, true preaching, prepared or improvised, is indeed a singular thing and is not going away and must not go away, for this singular thing, people who come to church, come to church. Preaching in the modern age is thus less about informing you and more about engagement and motivation, making you want to find out more on your own, increase your commitment to the good, and go forth prepared. And I know it gives you the creeps when I quote gospel. prepared to go and preach your gospel to all the nations. Preaching, whether scripted or not, is now more about fostering what in the old language of the church was called discipleship. Equipping you, who've already self-selected yourself for church, by setting you alight with the flame of the Spirit, that your lights may shine forth in the world and so change it. The flame that flickers in our chalice is also called a tongue. Today is Pentecost Sunday in the old liturgical calendar, commemorating the day when the Holy Spirit was said to have descended upon Jesus' disciples as tongues of flame. This is taken to mean that inspiration and language are closely related and accounted for the very rapid spread of Christianity in the first century by dint of inspired preaching by people on fire with the Spirit. A large fire can indeed be started by one single tongue of flame. A single tongue of flame can also ignite other tongues, as with these votive candles. What about your tongue of flame? What about yours? Once every month, at least, and sometimes more, there are opportunities for you to partake in this singular activity called preaching, to stand on your own feet, in your own truth, as your own person, with your own words, speaking in tongues of flame about matters of life and death. It is indeed only because this church encouraged me time and again to preach that I have sacrificed my working life to passing on the flame of our free faith. And if a mug like me is capable of this, you certainly are. The light of the divine shines in you as it does in all people. It's in you. And maybe it's way in you, but it's there. Right now, we are not hearing from enough of you. You have curiosities. You have knowledge. You have experiences. You might even have a wisdom to offer. You, not someone else, are the light of the world. People do not light a lamp to put it under a basket, but on a stand, that it may give light to the whole house. So let your flame shine before others, that they may see your good works and glorify in the Spirit. I urge you to make the sacrifice to share your gifts with us, even if it's only once a year or so. The most unique feature of the Unitarian preaching tradition is that it does not exclude you, the disciples. I will give you all the help and support you need. So stand up. Speak up. Use your words. You have nothing to lose except your silent passivity. You may even find your own unique tongue. You may even start a fire with it, and a fire that can light the world. And God knows it's needed. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.